So I've been encouraging various things, but talk about body awareness maybe. When I started, many of us started, I think we started with the kind of meditation technique where you notice the body, you sweep through the body, and you notice like, your head and shoulders, and it's a kind of common technique we've all done. And I found with that, that I tended to be very eye-centered. I tend to be kind of looking at my knee. And what I did tend to include is my head. That sounds rather weird. And then I started, just through other suggestions, I started to notice the eyes and the head in awareness. And I began to perceive awareness more as the body in awareness, rather than me in the head trying to look at my body. And it was just a change of perception, but the change of perception helped me to perceive awareness as space, as limitless, and the body much more like an energy form. There's something about it that loosened up my practice. So if you do, I think, first of all, I think body awareness is very important. It's very much part of the Satipatthana, the mindfulness of the body. I think it's an interesting way to be intelligent, because the body has information, and the body has its own information system that if one allows it to become conscious, it informs you in some kind of a way. And I think that's a kind of visceral intelligence. So and also just to kind of perceive the body as not like me looking at something. There can be a very strong kind of dualism too in that kind of practice, or I'm looking at the body, and very much a me doing the practice and pushing the practice from one bit of the body to the other. So anyway, just as a suggestion, first of all, body awareness is important. If we're only living in the cerebellum, you know, we're missing out a bit on life. If our life is always just head-centered, intellectual-centered, thought-centered, and we are assessing things always through judgments and opinions and so on, that's not necessary, but there's obviously more to life than that. And I think all of us realize the thinking mind can often be a liar. You know, a lot of my thoughts, I just refuse to believe anymore. Just like, I don't believe you, Mara, because they're caught off in their habitual. Like if you really, you know, that the story of our architect in New Zealand was on a long 3-month Vipassana retreat somewhere, and someone in the retreat thought that he was stalking her. Sure of it. So they called him in, and the teachers called him in, and he didn't have a clue. Then he found out who it was, and then from then on he was afraid that this person would think that he was stalking her. And there was just a total misperception. Total misperception of something in the mind the person had created. But once they talked, the person saw it was really ridiculous. So around perceptions and so on, they're necessary, and they're necessary, but this, that what the body is feeling informs you in a different way. So when there's tension, when there's resistance, when there's anxiety, these kind of underlying energies that we have, if we get in touch with them with them more fundamentally, then the storylines, we can assess the storylines, right? We can assess the story, but we can go beyond them too. So like if I'm talking with someone and I'm just, you know, reacting to them in some way, and I can just know my body and just not get caught in that reaction, I have a better chance of actually talking with them, because I'm just not reacting to the perceptions. If I have a lot of memory about someone, like a lot of times we hold the memory of people as being so-and-so. Maybe they did something 4 years ago and we perceived it to be faulty, And then forever and a day, wherever we see that person, we see the perception of 4 years ago. We don't allow them to change quite often, and we get stuck that way. Same with ourselves, we get stuck that way. And I think that stuckness is very much lodged in the body, some kind of tension or resistance or whatever. So if we're constantly monitoring the body, as well as the mood of the mind, and we're seeing clenching coming up, the heart closing, the stomach moving in anxiety, and we can observe those things as they fall away, I think we're much more in touch with what life is about, much less interpreting life through our old garbage, really. A lot of it is really, isn't it? It's just like old held things which are not alive. So if you do any kind of body meditation, see if, you know, the way I've been teaching, I said, notice the body in awareness. Notice your eyes. Notice, are your eyes clenching to try to see something? Huh? Notice your head in awareness. Those kinds of perceptions. So as you're meditating on whatever object you're doing, is there a kind of clenching? When you notice that you've been thinking, do you stop breathing? That's quite often a common one. You stop breathing and you try real hard. And those are signs of rather than relaxing the mind, opening it to the way things are, we're kind of trying to control things. They're subtle signs, but most of us have been at this practice for some time. And the subtlety of the body is very helpful for noticing that. And then in meditation, like physically, I think if the meditation is proceeding in a kind of profitable, skillful way, first of all, there will be the vitality of the body and the relaxedness of the body. So if I'm trying very, very hard and I'm getting tense and I'm not aware of that, try really hard, I'm kind of missing out on what's happening, on the way I'm making effort. But if I have good body awareness, and then I'm doing the breath, or doing metta, or just listening to the sound of silence, the body begins to have a kind of easing, a kind of smoothing out as the meditation progresses. Obviously, if I'm not awake, I can't notice that either. So in energy, in terms of energy, trying to find this balance between not enough and too much energy. How much effort do you need? You need different amounts of effort for different moods, different situations, how your body's affected. So maybe as I lead the meditation, just keep that in mind, that to see if you can get a sense of the whole body coming into consciousness. And this is very helpful if I've been recommending the last few years lying down meditation. Venerable Chunda suggested I could do a guided power nap meditation for 6 hours. But if you could learn to lie down and meditate as well as sitting and walking, in both, though, like in lying down meditation, you get this kind of, first the body feels very kind of chunky and stiff and restless or whatever. And then if you just stay with whole body awareness, there comes a point where the body just is a kind of vibratory element, and you're no longer in the body in the same way. It's not like you're having a like out of body experience or something like that. It's just that the relationship of me in the body begins to fall away. And these are the perceptions around emptiness that we talk about in Buddhism, where I'm not the body. The body is a formation in nature, and awareness knows the movement of the body. So in the same way, in a sitting practice, if you like doing body awareness like that, get a feeling of, like I was saying, the way I've been talking, you go from the base of the body, and you kind of work up and just get a sense of the body as a vibratory element. Like especially the sense organs are very good because they're very vibratory kind of alive places. And you learn to just let that become conscious. That's the secret. Rather than me going to the lips and feeling what does my left incisor feel like, something like that, you just let the whole thing kind of come up into consciousness. And then there's, now these are just suggestions, and there's more like a awareness being like the spacious possibility, and nature's moving in the spacious possibility. And then you feel bits of our body, and then you try to get like a whole body awareness. The body's sitting here, and awareness gets more and more a sense of space, and that strong sense of you being in the eyes and trying to meditate, the strong sense of a doer, that begins to fall away. And then it's almost like awareness is behind you. It kind of changes, and then the body feels like this vibratory thing, which it actually is. It's not a concept. It's a vibratory energy form. And then there's a lot of peacefulness in that, a lot of spaciousness in that. And so that in that transition from a kind of lumpy chunk of flesh, as it were, to that more vibratory possibility, these ideas of non-resistance and non-anticipation I find very helpful. Non-resistance will show you like resistance to pain or aversion to thought or just resistance to whatever's going on, might be sound. And then non-anticipation, again, these are subtleties that non-anticipation is like this constant trying to find something, trying to locate something, trying to recreate something, some experience you've had before. And between those two, there's this balanced attitude of vitality and presence. Welcoming is very good. You welcome the moment as it presents itself, as in opposition to anticipation and resistance. So those are the sort of ways that's just what I use. So there's resistance, anticipation, future, and kind of fighting with things, and then there's welcoming, spacious, open. Now you can localize, you can still localize your attention in the same way. You can localize it on the breath at the belly or whatever, but don't make the localization kind of this clutching tightness. Try to keep your meditation quite broad, because that you get the sense of awareness isn't in the head, and that it's a very spacious thing. All right, let's give that a go.